This is Digital Story Podcast number 792, May 25th, 2021. Today's theme is How to Photograph the Upcoming Lunar Eclipse. I'm Derek Story. Photographing celestial events is a wonderful way to add variety to your photography. No matter what your thing is, unless you're an astrophotographer, capturing a comet or an eclipse in your viewfinder can add a dash of enthusiasm to your creative endeavors. If you agree, then I have a wonderful opportunity for you in the wee hours of Wednesday morning, a total lunar eclipse. And on today's show, I'm going to discuss how to make the most of it. So I was thinking about Comet Neowise when I learned that this lunar eclipse was coming, and how wonderful it was during the pandemic, you know, going out for a few nights, getting some fresh air, having something to photograph while sheltered in place and didn't have a lot of other opportunities. And in fact, I have a print of Comet Neowise downstairs at the studio that I look at every day. It was just a nice thing for me. So I was thinking, with this lunar eclipse that's coming up tomorrow, if you're listening to this on Tuesday when this podcast comes out, it'll be early tomorrow morning, and we'll talk about times here in a second. I thought, wow, you know, we could do something with this lunar eclipse as well, something fun. Because one of the things that happened during Neowise, I would try to, you know, get tight on it. I would try to incorporate it into a scene with silhouettes of trees and buildings, you know, all this kind of stuff. And we can do the same thing with the moon. So all the different phases of the eclipse, that gives us opportunities. There's like 7 phases. You know, we can photograph each phase and then put them together in a montage. We can get tight on it and just, you know, try to really get some detail. We can incorporate it into a scene like I was talking about earlier, where we have the eclipse and then we have some silhouettes of buildings and trees and things. It's a fun event, and it's not super fast, right? Because we have time where it leads up, then there's total eclipse, and then it starts to wane. So we can play with this. It just seems like a terrific assignment right now to sort of shake things up. It's not too cold at night here in the north of the equator right now. So, you know, we can go out there and not freeze. And all we really need is a tripod and a camera and the lens that we want to use for the type of shot that we want to put together. So I thought, okay, let's talk a little bit about the eclipse itself, a little bit about technique, and I'm going to try to prime the pump, maybe get you out there early in the morning to do some shots. You know, again, something a little different right now. One of the things that inspired this podcast is an article that I found on Petapixel, and I want to cite it right now, and I put the link in the show notes. But it's How to Photograph a Total Lunar Eclipse. And this is really one of the better articles I have seen on this subject. And I thought, wow, okay, we'll base the podcast or first part of the podcast on this article. I'll put the article in the show notes so you can just sit back and listen, enjoy the show. And then if you want to, you know, refer to some of the things I discussed, you can go to the article that's in the show notes. And a terrific job on this article. Good job. Very nicely done. So, of course, you know, a lunar eclipse, what is it? Well, most of us learned about this, I think, in grade school, right? It's when the Earth moves between the sun and the moon. And so there's a shadow. And then this happens in phases. It doesn't happen all at once. Although, if you don't see it coming on, you can look up and go, whoa, what happened there? But generally speaking, we know it's coming. You know, so there are these 7 phases of the eclipse. All of them are interesting to photograph. But of course, we usually want to hang out for the total eclipse, you know, get the money shot, and then keep playing after that happens. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, what are some of the things that we need to know. How about, where can you see it? Let's start out with that. So according to the article here, the May 26, 2021 total lunar eclipse will be visible in the United States, Canada, Central America, South America, Antarctica, New Zealand, Australia, Japan, China, Indonesia, Philippines, Malaysia, Taiwan, and South Korea. So depending on where you are will be how much of the eclipse you can see. Is there a total eclipse? All that kind of stuff. Now, in terms of timing, you know, I looked this up. So, for instance, San Francisco, the eclipse begins at 4:12 a.m. Maximum eclipse is at 4:19. And then the total eclipse ends at 4:26. So you have, you know, a good 14 minutes there to play around. And, you know, that's nice. It's nice having the time to get some shots, to be ready to do some testing. Now, of course, the exposure changes during all the different phases of the eclipse. So, you know, we do have to do things while we're there. Just to kind of roll down here, so that's West Coast, U.S., 4:12 a.m. And then you start to move east a little bit. So you go to Phoenix, for example, still 4:12 there, but Denver, it's at 5:12 a.m. Dallas, 6:12 a.m. Sydney, Australia, 9:12 p.m. Tokyo, 8:12 p.m. Seoul, 8:12 p.m. In Singapore, 7:12 p.m. And of course, you can look it up. The person that wrote this actually works for PhotoPills, which is that excellent app that you can use to find out sun, moon, all that, all those sort of things. That's very helpful for our photography. And even though this wasn't a sponsor ad, obviously he mentioned PhotoPills and all that kind of stuff. So that app allows you to plan your photos ahead of time so that you know you're in the right place at the right time to capture the scene you want. And it's PhotoPills, all one word. He says, okay, if you want to use that, if you have that app, he walks through the steps in order how to use it for the eclipse. If you're interested in this, using PhotoPills Planner, you know, he does a nice little tutorial about it here on how to use it. And it's really cool looking at the screenshots he puts in here. Okay, how do you incorporate the eclipse into other objects? And he shows a picture here of the eclipse incorporated with a really cool looking bridge. And, you know, those of us that live out here on the West Coast, you know, we have the Golden Gate Bridge. And you're going, wow, I wonder if that would work. Well, you could use the app to look it up to see if you could get into position to have the bridge and the total eclipse in the same shot, you know, stuff like that. And that's one of the reasons why I'm bringing up this assignment, is that so you can think about, okay, what do we have? What do I have in my area that would be nice to integrate into the composition? The cool thing about the bridges and monuments and things like that is that they have light themselves. So you're not trying to work with, you know, the light of the moon and then some totally dark object. It's okay if you do, you'll get a silhouette, hopefully, of the totally dark object, because it'll still be against the sky that has some light in it, even at night. But, you know, bridges and things sometimes have lights on them, and you can create some really wonderful composition. So then he gets into talking a little bit about the equipment that you need. And I just want to, you know, read you his checklist here. So he says, I love my lunar eclipse checklist, which is why I'm going to read it to you. He's so passionate about this. It's the only way I make sure I bring everything I need for the shooting session. So I thought you might like it too. Long story short, this is the gear you need to photograph the lunar eclipse. First thing, telephoto lens. Second thing is optional, which is a teleconverter if you really want to get in tight. Of course, you need your camera, sturdy tripod and head, shutter release, and memory cards and batteries. That's it. Okay, just to be fair here, I don't want to come off as, you know, snarky here or anything, but I don't think I really need a checklist for that. You know, I think I can remember that. But anyway, it's fun. You wants to make sure he doesn't forget the tripod, right? Okay, so then he starts talking about the different lenses. So you could go wide, the 14 to 35 range, if you want to photograph the path of the eclipse with a beautiful landscape. The moon will be the small dot in the photo, but you can make it work in the composition. If you go long, 200 millimeter, 300 millimeter, 500 millimeter or more for a close-up view to create a powerful image of the lunar eclipse aligned with the subject, or to photograph all the phases of the eclipse without foreground. Now, the lens I was thinking about using is my Olympus Pro F28 40-150, because that'll give me 300 millimeters equivalent, which would allow me to get in tight. However, if I wanted to back off a bit, you know, I could back off to 80 millimeters, the 40 doubled, right? And without a teleconverter, I don't think I need to get that tight. I don't like the shots where it's just the eclipse and nothing else quite as much, mainly because everyone else has better shots of that than I do. So I'm kind of going, all right, I'm not going to compete in that area because I can't really compete with some of these guys for the, you know, the ultra tight, super detailed lunar eclipse shot. I'm going to lose that one. However, I can be in locations where the other guys and gals aren't, and then I can have something unique. So that's why I play that game. That's a full confession right there, so you know why I tend to shoot these the way that I do. That being said, I think I will play around with a 300 millimeter shot just, you know, to have it. Who knows? Then I could take it and superimpose it on another shot and do some sort of Photoshop wizardry, okay? The advantage of using a crop sensor camera versus full-frame camera is that the focal length multiplier effect. For instance, an APS-C camera with a 1.5 crop factor sensor, 200 millimeter focal length lens turns into 300 millimeter. Well, those of us that shoot Micro Four Thirds have it even better because my 150 millimeter F28 turns into a 300 millimeter. Yay, that's so much fun. I love that lens. I do love that lens. Okay, here's a nice point. And this is even though the moon, even at eclipse, is a fairly bright object. But he says, don't press the shutter button on your camera. If you do, you'll shake the camera and your images won't be 100% tack sharp. And you want them crispy and sharp. So he always says, you know, use a shutter release or some other tool to do that for you. And I'm saying you can use the self-timer as well, especially those of us that have cameras that have 2-second and 10-second self-timer. The 2-second self-timer is actually quite nice, and I just find myself using that quite often. Also, for those of us that have mirrorless cameras with apps, a lot of times you can just use the app. And the Olympus camera, using the app as a remote release is very handy, and you can even make adjustments to the camera on the app itself. So that's another fun thing to do. You know, just have your smartphone out, have the app fired up, make sure you get everything working right before the eclipse starts so that you'll know that the camera and the phone are talking, and then you can use the app as a remote release or to make some changes on your camera. He mentions bringing extra batteries and memory cards. I'm not sure I'm going to take that many shots where I need extra memory cards, but I do agree that you want to have an extra battery or two with you. Oh, so heartbreaking when you are there and it's like the magical moment and you start getting that flashing battery thing and you forgot your battery, or you brought a dead battery instead of a live battery, or, you know, any number of horrible things that happen. I don't want any of those to happen to you. So make sure that you have a battery with you, an extra battery, and make sure that it's a fresh battery. It's a fresh battery. And then he also mentions shooting in RAW compared to JPEG. I totally agree with this. This is a time when you want as much flexibility with the file as possible, you know, so that you can recover highlights and play with shadows and collect as much data during that shot as possible. So yes, shoot in RAW, and I don't even think you need to shoot in RAW plus JPEG. Just shoot in RAW. Just let it fly in RAW. He talks about in metering to set the spot metering mode, meter light on the moon to nail the exposure. Now, I think that'll work nicely, fine, when the moon is eclipsed, because then that brings it a little bit closer to what the meter is expecting, right? The meter likes 18% gray or in that area. an eclipsed moon. I don't have that data on hand right now, but I'm guessing it's somewhere in that neighborhood. So that'll work fine. When the moon's bright, you know, when the eclipse is just starting, it's just a sliver on it, then I don't think the spot metering on the moon would work as well. So I'm thinking that's more for once the eclipse has really started to take over the moon itself. Now, he says set the aperture to f8 to get a nice deep depth of field, but be ready to open the diaphragm to f5.6 or more to keep the shutter speed under 2 seconds. Under 2 seconds. Why is that? Well, things are moving, right? The Earth is moving, and you know, you don't want too long of exposure. We've all seen what happens when we think that, you know, we can go 4 or 5 seconds on a moonshot and we get nothing but blur. Nothing but blur. So don't set the shutter speed for more than 2 seconds. You don't want motion blur. Keep it under 2 seconds. Keep your ISO low. Keep it around, you know, 100, 200 or so. You don't need to jack it up. If somehow, you know, there's a variable there where you do need to raise your ISO, our cameras can handle going up to 400, 800, no problem. But you don't have to start there, I guess is what I'm saying. You don't have to start at 800. Go ahead and start at 100 or 200. See what your exposure is, you know, and then adjust as needed. You do want to bracket your exposures a bit. And even though you're shooting raw, I think you have enough time to do some bracketing just to give you the best file possible. Now, he talks about focusing, and I like what he says here. This is something that was kind of new to me. He goes, when you're ready to start shooting, focus at the edge of the moon and take a test shot. Use the live view option on the LCD screen to double check that the moon is in focus. If you're photographing the lunar eclipse aligned with an interesting subject, I recommend that you focus on your subject. If your subject is behind the hyperfocal distance, the eclipse will appear acceptably sharp in the photo. Yeah, and that is a really good point when you're thinking about all this. Now, if you get the stop down a little bit, that's really going to help. If you're shooting Micro Four Thirds, that's going to help as well, right? Because, you know, we get that little extra depth of field, the smaller sensor. If I have some kind of foreground subject, and then I have the eclipse happening that's in that same frame, the one thing I don't want is that foreground subject to be distractingly out of focus. I want that in focus, and then try to have enough depth of field so that my eclipse is acceptably in focus as well. So there's a little something to play with depending on what your composition is. All righty. If you're just shooting the moon itself, then you don't have to worry about it. So those are the things that you really need to know to go out and shoot the eclipse. I'm going to get up and go take a look at it and have my camera ready to go myself. I want to grab some shots. I just feel like doing this. It just feels like a fun assignment right now to shake things up a bit. I hope you do too. If you do, and you want to share the pictures, you want to share some shots, you can just send them to me. I'll collect whatever we get, and I'll put them on our Facebook page. I'll probably put them on the TDS website, and we can share some of these shots as well. It's a fun assignment. I hope you get out there and take some shots. And if you get something you really like, let's share it with the rest of the community. Okay, I have two companion articles here. I'm going to read you the first one, and then I'll read you the second one a little bit later in the show. This is kind of fun. I don't think I've ever done this before. So here's the first one, and this is from Digital Camera World. Adobe Update brings camera phone portrait mode to Photoshop. Let me read you what they say at Digital Camera World. The latest update to the Adobe Photoshop will give desktop photo editors an instant portrait effect similar to that of portrait mode found on camera phones. The update includes a new neural filter called Depth Blur that lets photographers choose different focal lengths in their images and blurs the background intelligently, in doing so creating bokeh effects similar to using a fast portrait length lens. It is already possible to create the effect in Photoshop by using various blurs and manually masking subjects, but the process can be tedious and time-consuming, especially for beginners. the depth blur feature automates the process and, although not instant, makes achieving sharp subjects and blurred backgrounds much easier. The new tool is part of the May 2021 update to Adobe Photoshop and can be found in the Filters drop-down menu under Neural Filters. It works by creating a depth map of your image, which can be adjusted with an artificial depth of field. So this is in the latest version of Photoshop. It's kind of cool. One thing I will say here, though, I just can't resist, you know, not saying this, is that if you shoot with an iPhone, a modern iPhone, let's say the iPhone 12 Pro, and you process with Photos on Mac OS Big Sur, then you can do this just like with those simple tools. Between the iPhone, you know, you capture in portrait mode, Photos on Mac OS Big Sur recognizes the image was captured in portrait mode, and in Photos it allows you to change the background depth. And if you use other apps, editing extensions such as Raw Power, it will even allow you to change the lighting on the subject versus the background, things like that. The only point I'm making is that if you like this sort of thing, you don't have to use Photoshop. You can use your semi-modern iPhone. You can even do it with iPhone 10, whatever, and Photos, and do the same thing. Okay. All right. Put a bookmark there. We're going to come back to this topic in a minute. I want to mention that Capture One Pro 21 Essential Training is out in the wild right now. This is the app that I use for my professional work. There's a number of cool new features in version 21, including speed edit, dehaze slider, style brushes, and then, of course, the import browser, which I know I rave about a lot, but I just use it all the time and I love it, which allows me to do my sorting early so I don't have to bring in a bunch of big files that I don't need onto my laptop. If you're interested in this application, if you want to learn it, you know, you can download the free trial to Capture One Pro 21, take this training, decide if you like it or not. If you do like the app, then you can go ahead and buy the app and give it a go. It's available on LinkedIn Learning. I have a link to it in the show notes. All right, let's do the companion article to the Photoshop depth blur. And this one is on f-stoppers, and I have a link to it as well. And it says, Photoshop's brand new depth blur feature needs a lot of work. All right, here we go. I'm just going to read you what this author says. And I have the link, as I said, in the show notes. With the latest batch of updates, Photoshop has added a new feature to its array of neural filters, depth blur. Very much in beta, this tool has potential, but there's clearly a lot of improvements required before it becomes worth using. Unmesh Dinda of PixImperfect runs you through the new feature that arrived in the latest update of Photoshop, and while the depth mapping functionality will bring lots of possibilities, it's clear from the beta version that of depth blur that Photoshop has a lot of work to do before it becomes useful to photographers working with high-resolution images. Dinda shows that existing tools within Photoshop can create far better results, and it's possible that Adobe's engineers will seek to merge these techniques to create improvements. While Dinda's experiences show the current limitations, Adobe's potential to harness machine learning will only expand, particularly as more images become available. If you're wondering why Adobe has decided to roll out a beta feature that is still so far from producing good results, ouch! It's probably because its machine learning needs to figure out what works and what doesn't. Notice how the dialog box asks you each time if you're happy with the results. The neural filters depend on this feedback to improve. Last paragraph here. While it's easy to scoff at these early efforts, it's quite possible that in 5 years, you will struggle to differentiate between an image shot at f1.4 and the same scene shot at f5.6 with some depth blur applied. Whether this will merely increase the number of images with insanely shallow depth of field or if it has practical application for photographers remains to be seen. All right, so there's another point of view on this new feature, which is, and you know what? I'll tell you, I haven't tried this yet. I haven't tried it yet. As you probably remember, I'm not a huge Photoshop user. I have like 5 things I need to do in Photoshop every now and then, and that's when I use it. And otherwise, I have my other tools that I prefer. That being said, I haven't gone in there and played with this particular tool yet. But my guess is that, you know, understanding what I know about machine learning and so forth, that this second story is probably a bit more accurate. I have a feeling in the first story, they went a little bit more off the press release, didn't actually test it, and that the second story seems to have a lot more hands-on. So what does this mean for you? I think this means for you, if you're a Photoshop user already, you want to play with this, then that's exactly what it is. You know, you're learning it, you're, you know, experimenting with it. It's allowing to learn a little bit about, you know, what you're doing. And, you know, there's just some fun here. Not quite ready for prime time, it sounds like. And if you do have an iPhone and you do have access to photos, try, you know, using that tandem. It's a lot of fun and it works really well. Not for serious high resolution photography. We're still talking about shooting with an iPhone in that scenario. Whereas, you know, this one, you could use, you know, your high resolution Sony or whatever camera. It's sort of cool to learn and play with. And we can, even right now at these early stages, still produce some pretty interesting results. I want to mention the donation kit for the carefree shipping of found film cameras. I haven't talked about this for a while, but I had some shipments come in, some donations come in, and I was just so excited about it that, you know, these, because, you know, these folks, even though I send them the donation kit, so, you know, they get the box, they get the prepaid label, you know, they get, you know, everything that they need comes to them. They need to provide the tape. And then put the box together, right? Tape the box together, put the gear in it, the film gear in it. And then they have USPS come pick it up at their front door when they deliver the mail. But nonetheless, you know, you still got to pull the stuff together, all that. And I'm always so appreciative of when people do this. And I just want to mention one of the gents right now that has donated recently. His name's Greg. And he wrote me this. He goes, "My father-in-law passed away recently, and I would like to donate his film cameras to the film camera shop. I've heard you speak of this for years on your podcast, and now finally I have some good equipment to send your way." I got this a while back. I send Greg the donation kit. He's on the other side of the country, and he had a fair amount of stuff, so I sent him a large box. And that box just arrived today, and I opened it up, and it was kind of a neat moment for me because I knew all this gear belonged to his father-in-law, which means it was special to him too, right? Because his father-in-law is special. And then thinking about, okay, I'm looking at it, I go, this will clean up nice. Oh, this is in good shape. This will clean up nice. And then thinking about giving all this stuff a second life through the film camera shop and then getting it into someone's hands who's maybe taking their first junior college course on film photography and how excited they're going to be. So it was a pretty fun moment for me, and I just wanted to thank Greg publicly and thank the other folks who have recently donated as well. Thank you so much. If you're interested in doing this, just go to the Nimble Photographer, thenimblephotographer.com. Click on, you know, contact, you know, to get the contact form. It'll say right there, just let me know what you have, and then I'll get back to you, and we'll take it from there. And a huge thanks to all the folks that have donated gear to the film camera shop. I truly appreciate it. All right, just a little bit of virtual camera club news before we sign off today so you can get ready to photograph the lunar eclipse that's only hours away. We have 0 seats remaining for our Ultimate Black and White Photography Workshop. And I am taking a wait list, although people tend not to cancel for the online workshops. You know, they tend to manage to make it one way or another. So what this tells me, along with the infrared workshop, is that I'll probably run another session of both the Ultimate Black and White Photography Workshop and the infrared workshop a little bit later this year. So if you missed it, for instance, the email that I got today was, he said, you know, I just hadn't listened to the podcast in a few weeks. And so I listen and I find out about the workshop, and then I go over there and it's sold out. And they do sell out fairly quickly. I won't say I'm sorry about that, because I'm really thrilled about that. But I totally get, you know, what that means for you. If you miss a couple shows, sometimes you miss the window to become part of the workshop. And the thing that I can do is offer the workshop again. And so I'll do that for both black and white and infrared. So just stay tuned there. And thanks to everyone who did sign up. I'm really looking forward to working on these techniques with you. I want to give a shout out to our Patreon members. These are the folks that support us month in and month out. Patreon members, we got something new coming your way. I want some feedback on the workshops. I'm starting to work on the latter half of this season and then into next season, and I have some questions for you. I'm going to get that on our Patreon site later this week. You gave me so much good feedback on the last question that I had, and I'm looking forward to your insights on this one as well. Our Inner Circle members has helped me in so many ways, not only financially, but also help guide this community and the things that we talk about and the things that we do. If you're interested in becoming an Inner Circle member and becoming part of this really cool collection of artists, all you have to do is go to any page on the Digital Story, thedigitalstory.com, click on the Patreon tile, take a look around, and if you like what you see, join us. And finally, a huge thanks to our friends at Red River Paper. They're the folks that have been supporting this podcast for not weeks, not months, but years. They provide excellent printing paper in a variety of surfaces, in a variety of sizes. They have all sorts of clever things for projects that you can do. Fine art cards, panorama cards, square fine art greeting cards. I mean, really some neat stuff. And not only do they have the paper, you know, that's scored and, you know, will work for this, but they have the envelopes and the glassine sleeves and all the stuff to go with it. If you're thinking about doing a cool printing project, maybe a series of your lunar eclipse shots, that would be pretty nice. All you have to do is click on the tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story, the Red River Paper tile. That'll take you over to our landing page. From there, you can explore around. And also, if you want to get involved with the printing community, I recommend going to their Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. All right, that's going to do it for me this week. Thank you so much for joining me. I hope you go out there and get some good eclipse shots. Come back and join me next week. I'm working on some very cool stuff for that show. Until then, have a great week. Stay creative and be safe. Bye-bye now.